I entitled my talk, Climate Change, Is It True? And actually the title was caused by several discussions with Christians during the last election in Germany. I was a little bit politically active and I met many Christians who told me there is no climate change. And therefore I thought just let's go for this title. And for me as a Christian, I consider it very important just that for God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Climate change, of course, you have seen many pictures also on TV. Here, for example, that you have a fire in California. There were fires many parts of the world. So the question is, what causes climate change? Can we do and what can we do? And what's our responsibilities? And for me, it's another part or another sentence from the Bible is very important, where Jesus said, love the Lord, your God, with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And the second is love your neighbor as yourself. So what does climate change mean to us from the perspective that we should love our neighbors as we love ourselves? One of the things what is just a fact, because one can measure it easily, is just the variation of the carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere. Here I plotted the carbon dioxide concentration and it changes during the last 2000 years, so just from Jesus' birth till today. Here you see that it was more or less constant during the last 2000 years, and suddenly with the start of the Industrial Revolution, it increased sharply. And so far, you just only see that it increases and increases. It's not a sign of a turning point. These variations, these are caused by the periodic variation from spring to autumn, just seasonal changes. So the carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere increases continuously. How do we produce carbon dioxide? And I think that is one of the questions several of us asking. Why do we have carbon dioxide? Why is it a problem? And from where do we get it? And here just we can actually easily calculate how much carbon dioxide we produce. So most fossil fuels, for example, petrol, just here is an example, petrol typically is composed of some kind of carbon chains. So the length varies and there sometimes they are a little bit, can be a little bit further molecules, but just easily speaking, just simply that we have something like that. We have change of different lengths. We have here carbon atoms, we have hydrogen atoms, and they are somehow connected. I said I'm not a chemist, so the angles are not completely correct, but these molecules look something like that. Now what's going to happen if we add heat, if we start burning? And just if we start burning, that implies we break these bonds. That is just implies what we are doing by heating, we are breaking bonds. And so just we are breaking bonds, we are breaking several bonds, all of those. So what we end up with, we have our hydrogen atoms and we have carbon atoms. Yes. So, and what is, now we have our isolated molecules, but of course in the atmosphere, they are not stable. So what do they do? They take oxygen from the atmosphere. In the atmosphere, we have quite a lot of oxygen. So they take here single oxygen atoms. On the one hand, what we form is then just carbon dioxide as a molecule. On the other hand, what we form is water as a molecule. So just also here on purpose, I decided to change the size of these molecules a bit, just so that you see going from the carbons, just replacing initially the hydrogen by oxygen, so the molecular weight, so how heavy a molecule is, greatly increases. So that is just what happens. We replace our hydrogens by oxygen and we form a large number of molecules. And because we know how many carbons there were, we can calculate how many carbon dioxide molecules we are going to produce. This is here just from that one. So the weight of CH2 is 14 gram per mole. Mole is a certain number of molecules, 6 × 10⁻³ molecules. We are going for carbon dioxide. This is heavier, so we are going to 44 gram per mole. From that point, we can even calculate easily just if we burn 1 liter of petrol, inserting the density of petrol. Petrol is a little bit not as heavy, a little bit lighter than water, so we produce, roughly speaking, 0.75 kilogram of petrol. It depends a little bit what kind of petrol, so these numbers can differ a little bit, as I will show in the next slide. And so from that point, just inserting, we estimate just if we burn 1 liter of petrol, we produce 2.4 kilogram of carbon dioxide. Diesel is a little bit heavier, so it says it's 2.7 more or less, but just from that point, these numbers can be calculated quite accurately. Inserting the number of moles, now this is just in moles. This is, if we burn 1 liter of petrol, that is the number of carbon dioxide molecules we release to the atmosphere. It's really a lot. And that is the problem. So now we have a huge number of carbon dioxide molecules in the atmosphere. The question is what they are doing there. So one can ask, carbon dioxide, maybe it's not relevant, just that we produce from burning fuel or just there are many other sources, you never know. And therefore, I just estimated roughly, so how much carbon dioxide we are producing just only from burning petrol. So this one can do the analog estimate just for gas, because we know how much gas we burned during the last years, and we also know how much coal we burned during the last years. So this one is just a plot showing the global petrol consumption from 1965 to 2020 in million of barrels per day. And so it's increasing, also it's increasing, unfortunately. So just if you want to know how much carbon dioxide we produced, we just take the area under this curve, then it's what we have for this, roughly speaking, 60 years. This is the number of barrels per day, so we need to multiply it with the number of days, so 365 days. And then we have, as I said, just thinking on average, say just 60 million barrels per day. So these are 60 million barrels. Knowing that one barrel is 159 liter, respectively 377 kilogram carbon dioxide. So from that point, we can estimate that humans released in the order of 5 × 10⁻¹⁴ power kilogram carbon dioxide, just and then inserting the moles, then we can calculate the number of molecules humans produced during the last 60 years, how much carbon dioxide we released to the atmosphere. Because carbon dioxide is a comparatively stable molecule, therefore most of these molecules are still over there. Why do we burn carbon fossil fuels? Of course, we want to burn fossil fuels because we want to gain energy. Burning of different types of fossil fuels produces different amount of energies. Just for gas is primarily just only methane, just it's in principle a carbon with 4 hydrogens. We produce only in the order of 0.2 to 0.24 kilogram carbon dioxide to produce 1 kWh of energy. So, and this one increases for petrol, kerosene, oil, coal, and also wood. Wood has the highest, but wood has the advantage just if we burn wood, we can plant a new tree. So from that point, it's a cycling mechanism, whereas we cannot easily recycle coal, for example. That is here, this one motivates these numbers. That is why people in climate science often say just we need to leave oil and coal because this produce the largest amount of carbon dioxide to produce 1 kilowatt hour of energy. But there is one problem actually, because during production of these different fossil fuels, you also have leakage problems. And leakage problems are much more pronounced if you produce gas compared to liquids, because gas can leak much easier. So in general, we have a leakage problem of in the order of 5%. So just typically 5% of the methane is going into the atmosphere. Then the question is, what happens to these molecules? And that is why I sketched also these molecules a little bit like with the spring molecules. So just the spring visualizes how easily the molecule can be excited. So just only if you have light coming and the molecule stays like that, it's just rotating only, it doesn't matter. But the problem is if it absorbs energy, and methane can absorb easily energy easily. And therefore methane is particularly problematic because it has an 84 times more four times more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. The advantage is that it decomposes a bit easier. Okay, so just a simplified sketch. So you have here the sunlight. The sunlight, we get visible light to the Earth. And during when it hits the Earth, we observe a change of the energy just by the interaction with the Earth. So just the wavelength changes. How to visualize it, just that what you know often, if you have, for example, if a ball, if you let a ball fall, then it also interacts with the ground and it does not jump up as high as it was. Therefore, it loses some energy. And that is the same here with the interaction of here of the light rays. So with the interaction of the Earth, so you transform sunlight into infrared energy. So just you change the wavelengths a bit. And now with these changed wavelengths, the problem goes, because now with initial wavelengths, these were not just when they came here, the visible light, they just passes, they are not able to excite these the bonds, or they're just, it does not, carbon dioxide is not able to take up the energy. However, now if you go for the infrared energy, we can excite the molecules, so the molecules are start to vibrate and they just release the energy. They release it in all different directions, but also partially it's going back, coming back to the Earth. And we have different molecules in the atmosphere that is primarily it's carbon dioxide, water, and methane, which easily or effectively take up radiation. So just with water, but I can also discuss it later, just is less problematic. The problems are differently compared to carbon dioxide and methane because it's an indirect effect. So just we have a huge number of water molecules and the water molecules do not change too much. However, if we have higher temperatures, then it may change, increase a little bit. And then if these water molecules are also absorbing energy and they are also releasing, so just then they will increase temperature rise even a little bit more. Okay, what is in the meantime, what is also very well known is because you can measure how much light is re-emitted. So just that here you see the cumulative carbon dioxide emission since the start of the Industrial Revolution. And here you see the temperature increase. And what you see nicely is that there is a linear increase of the average global temperature with the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Here what you see at the moment, we are somewhere here, roughly speaking. There are different colors, and these different colors correspond to the situation of the temperature increase, depending on how much more carbon dioxide equivalent. So carbon dioxide, I use carbon dioxide also including the other greenhouse gases, methane, particularly methane. So if we have more greenhouse gases produced, and then just how fast we are able to reduce our, stop burning fossil fuels. And furthermore, you see that there is a certain width, and this width is indeed partially due because of water, curiosities because of water, and but also because of cumulative effects, which one cannot predict very well so far. The models are getting better, but still there's uncertainties. So far, unfortunately, the situation is that calculations have always been too optimistic because scientists do not want to panic. And therefore, they like to go for the more, try not to communicate the worst case scenario, but that if everything goes well. When I discuss with students regularly, people or students say, yes, if I say we have a carbon dioxide problem, then they answer, yes, but we have, now we have so much pollution in our atmosphere, but the situation is improving. So that many students mix carbon dioxide with aerosols, different types of also fine particles. And actually, aerosols absorb energy, so they cause cooling of the atmosphere, cooling of the temperature. That is also sometimes what you may have heard from people discussing, that one is thinking about just spraying aerosols into the atmosphere just to reduce the temperature. So just this one is a contribution of aerosols in the atmosphere, which need to be added. It's otherwise, if there wouldn't be, then the temperature, average temperature would have been already a little bit higher than it is without. So aerosols can lower the temperature, and aerosols and carbon dioxide, these are really two distinctive processes. Thinking about this one, for me, it's always the question, what does this information mean, thinking about our neighbors and thinking about that we should love our neighbors as ourselves? I think that was one of the reasons that also not only I asked myself this question, what does it mean for our neighbors, but also many politicians asked these questions. And therefore, in 2015, many politicians from many different countries were sitting together and coming up with a Paris Agreement, where they stated that the global temperature rise should remain well below 2 degrees Celsius. And preferentially, it should not increase by more than 1.5 degrees. We will hit this 1.5 degree boundary likely in approximately 5 years. Temperature changes are not equal everywhere. So this is just a figure from the last IPCC report, just from August last year, where people calculated the temperature increase. Here, these are the short-term predictions till 2040. You find also similar maps for longer periods with different scenarios, but just this one is the less worst scenario. But what I like to stress is that here, depending on where you are living on the Earth, that you will face more or less temperature variation, or less, more or less temperature increase. And of course, if people use this term 1.5 degrees on average, it implies that on land you have much more, and over sea it's much less. So over land you will have then already something in the order of 2.7 if it's on average 1.5. But here, just in the northern part, we will face much more. So from the part of Germany where I am from, in Rhine and Palatinate, it's in the at the moment we are having 1.6 on average. So the consequences of global warming greatly differ for different areas. Here, these are three different simulated scenarios for the situation for the near prediction just for the next 18 years. So just how the world would look like if we end up with a temperature increase of 1.5 degrees, if we end up with a temperature increase of 2 degrees, or if we end up with a temperature increase by 4 degrees. At the moment, if we do not end up with really drastic changes, the temperature increase will be approximately 3 degrees. That is what we are going for at the moment. So this implies that in many areas of the world, that on average, it will be much warmer by 7 degrees or 10 degrees. And of course, the problem is that we have these huge temperature fluctuations. So just even if you say on average is just 2 degrees, and then one of my former colleagues told me, Doris, but I love the summer. And I said, okay, I understand that you love the summer if you have sufficient water and if you have sufficient food and if it's just only on average and just 2 degrees warmer. No, but we do not have this on average 2 degrees warmer. We have huge temperature fluctuations, so this extreme weather problem. And therefore, even every additional amount of global warming changes get larger. So what are further consequences? Of course, with increasing temperature, the ice is going to melt. Melting of ice is going to increase the sea level. Therefore, just what are the consequences if ice is going to melt? It's just the Earth will be smaller. And here, if it's under the worst cases, it's really the worst case scenario, if all the ice on the world is going to melt, then we will end up with situations that Venice will be in the sea, but also just other countries, Stockholm, Stockholm, Shanghai will be in the middle of the sea. So just we will end up with many cities which will get flooded. So one of the problems is, that is what you also likely heard about a lot, is tipping points. These are irreversible changes, and these can cause some kind of self-amplifying effects. And also these kind of self-amplifying effects, because we do not have any statistics on these kind of processes, because we never face this situation. Therefore, of course, they also go in hand with some insecurities. So what are the consequences exactly? But few of these tipping points are just that the Greenland ice sheet is going to disintegrate, accompanied with the sea level rise, that we will have the melting of the temperature with the temperature rise. In the meantime, we can estimate quite well how much carbon dioxide equivalent is here in the northern hemisphere. And from this one, from this, the order of 1,000 gigaton carbon dioxide, corresponding then to a temperature increase of roughly speaking 0.7 degrees. And of course, another one problem is the coral reef die-off. So just I thought in the past, before I was started to be more interested in the topics, I thought, okay, why do people worry about it? Just the coral reefs are quite beautiful, but just if you're not going to dive, so what? But of course, the huge problem is if the coral reefs are gone, then we have a huge problem with fish mortality, because the coral reefs are the breeding sites. So what is the tipping point? Therefore, I try to prepare a small video, assuming it's going to play. Yes, it plays. What you see here is my finger and a glass filled with water, something similar to that what I have here. If it wouldn't have played, then I would have shouted it here. That is why I took, it's actually the same glass, the glass along. And what you see is just I started tilting this glass of water. And you see so far nothing is going to happen. Just how to understand the tilt angle should imply the temperature increase. Therefore, just a certain temperature increase, nobody worries. So there are no consequences. That is why I was not interested in climate change during the last 30 years. Of course, I wrote something in my proposals occasionally. The European wants to reduce carbon dioxide, and it read well in my proposals, and therefore it was good to get funding. But in principle, I did not care, because all the water was in the glass. I did not feel any consequences. And that is the problem with the climate change, that we do not feel the consequences. You just see it tilts a little bit more, but just all the water is there. How can I explain to somebody or show to somebody, people, we need to worry, because at a certain angle, the glass is going to fall. And if you do not experience, and if you do not know the facts, and that makes it so extremely difficult also to communicate climate change, because there are people do not feel the experiences. So now slowly we start to feel some kind of experience changes, because we had in Europe, we had this 2018 summer. That was also the summer where I started to realize, oh, it's warm. And actually, it were my children saying, "Mom, you need to start to become active." My kids started to become active before me. If you already pass the tipping point, it does not imply that you immediately realize the consequences. You only know it's irreversible, but you do not realize the consequences immediately, because here, thinking about the water, it's still in the glass. But one cannot come back. And that makes it even more ugly, that therefore people are discussing, did we already pass the tipping point or not, or why? Because it's very difficult to tell whether we passed one, because the consequences, till at this moment, are still extremely difficult to experience. Okay, so yes, it should be bad. So that is why I started to become also a little bit involved in climate politics. And here you see a table from 2017, by how many degrees of temperature increase will you experience depending on your age. And that is 2017, as I said, just every forecast were too optimistic. In the meantime, the numbers, everything should be shifted to higher temperatures, because here in my age, this one, they think about something a bit in the 1.5 degree regime, so maybe here just entering 2 degrees. But as I said, just in 5 years' time, we will, roughly speaking, in 5 years' time, we will have cross 1.5 degrees. This is the age of my kids, so they will most likely end up in a 2.5 degrees world, most likely even more. And what are the consequences? Just as is what you know, there are these problems if 1 degree, that you start already to have unstable food supply. You need to think about Madagascar. There was no rain during the last 3 years. Many other countries, there also is no rain at the moment. In Somalia or stuff like that, it was not raining during the last year. So we will have then, with increasing heat waves, flood and drought, 2 degrees deadly heat waves and flood and food cravings. So 3 degrees drought and famine for millions of peoples, 4 degrees, 100 of flooded cities, etc. So just, and this one is, here you see three curves. This one is a curve with 5% likeliness, and this one is also just the lower five, the optimistic 5% likeliness that we will end up with this scenario. We do not know, it depends on our habits. But therefore, so forecasts so far, only what is a fact is that forecasts have been too optimistic. And reality is that at the moment we are destroying God's world. And then when I was discussing with several Christians during the last election, many people said to me, just pray. Of course, praying is very important. But on the other hand, I also know that in Luke in chapter 12, Jesus was written when Jesus is tested in the wilderness, and when the devil came to ask Jesus, please jump down the mountains, nothing is going to happen. And Jesus answers, what it is said, do not put the Lord, your God, to the test. And I think that is the same in our case. We should not test God. And therefore, we should not say just only, let's pray. Of course we need to pray, but we also need to take responsibilities. And we can do things. And there are many things one can do. We can become active. And I think what one really needs is wind energy, huge amount wind and even more wind energy. And it was a pity when I went here through Poland, I did not see a single windmill. And in Germany also have all the time the problem that people say, they are ugly. And I think they are ugly, but on the other hand, people are going to die with hunger. Then you have solar energy and of course heat pumps. On the other hand, what you also need is we need to save energy. We need to use less often our cars, go by bike more often. We need to have, in Germany, the very sensitive topic of tempo limit, because Germans think that we should drive as fast as possible because it's our freedom, not thinking about the consequences of our neighbors, but just it's our freedom. We should go for less air conditioning in summer and less heating in winter periods. I think we can put on an extra pullover. We need to have, of course, better isolation of buildings. We need to have more trees, also very important for biodiversity. And we need to change our habits. This implies that we should have less meat, more bread and vegetables. We should fly less, and that is indeed was for me, it was a problem coming over here, because there was no possibility to come over here by train, and I really wanted to come by train, but in the meantime I realized I'm too old to stay, change trains in four in the night, or just to stay at some kind of train station for a few hours. And we should also have fewer dogs and horses, because surprisingly, at least in Germany, approximately one third of the meat is going to dogs, to feeding dogs and cats. And horses produce, even one horse produces even more carbon dioxide on average than a cow. And therefore, we are always saying we need to have less cows, but we need even have less dogs, and then we can use the green land for solar energy. Okay, and of course, I think it's also very important to inform people, to discuss this problem, just to make people aware, and that is implies in our community, in family, neighbors, and friends, because God loves this world, and God has entrusted this world to us, and he gave his son to save this world, which we are destroying at the moment. And God told us, just love your neighbor as yourself. And I think we cannot stand idle by and watch people starve to die, to death. And therefore, I think what is very important, that God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention.